29. They had only been driving across the desert on their dirt monster-powered ox cart for an hour before Martin's rendition of the chorus of A Horse with No Name stopped being even slightly amusing. Of course, it took him another hour to actually stop, but they all knew that irritating everyone else is half the fun of singing. Britt was steering. They had not been going for long when they realized that both steering and braking were far too taxing for any one person to do single-handed without relief. Swapping out the brake position was easy enough, but changing drivers was tricky. The vehicle was not going to stop or even slow down. The monster was pushing them just as Britt had predicted and would continue to until they either wanted to stop or screwed up. Watching the creature chase, then briefly carry Roy, had given her the idea. She saw that the creature's programming was simple. If the target is in front of you, chase it. If the target's no longer in front of you, acquire target. She recognized instantly that if they could stay in front of the beast forever, it would chase them forever, possibly pushing them forward at its top running speed, in theory, forever. The dirt creature's top running speed turned out to be about 15 miles per hour, which felt plenty fast. In a car, that would be cruising around a parking lot looking for a space speed. In a slightly modified ox cart with no sides, crossing an unpaved, hill-infested desert in the middle of the night with no headlights, pushed forward by a hulking creature that would stomp you into a puddle of ooze if you fell off, it was more than fast enough. Luckily, the sky was clear and the moon was out. Also, the trail of footprints they had started following had become a relatively well-marked path. It was just narrow enough for the cart to straddle it, and it was paved with some white, reflective, gravel-like material. Britt didn't think it was rock, but she wasn't going to try to stop the cart to identify it. Whatever the stuff was, it shone in the moonlight and made it much easier to follow Philip's party. That was how she thought of it. Philip's party. The others were here to rescue their friends and Jimmy. She was here to rescue Philip and his friends, and Jimmy. She and Philip had been a couple for years, but Philip's circle of friends was still her circle of acquaintances.
That doesn't seem healthy, she thought. It also doesn't seem like Philip's fault.
Britt had only been driving for an hour, but she was about ready to let someone else take over. Her arms ached and her nerves were fried. Roy was on the brakes, releasing them as the cart went up hills and applying them as it coasted down, trying to keep steady contact with the dirt creature's head. The hills and valleys were small, regular, and gentle enough that they had spent some time debating whether you can call an illness seasickness if you got it on dry land. In the end, none of them could agree whether it was seasickness or not, but all agreed that talking about it was not making it better. Martin and Gwen were huddled together in the middle of the cart, resting. Not sleeping. None of them made any pretense at sleeping. The cart was not a relaxing place to be. If someone had asked Britt, she'd have sworn that she was concentrating on the path directly ahead, following the path and trying to avoid any obstacles in their way. That's what she thought she was doing, but subconsciously, she was occasionally scanning the entire area ahead. She kept not seeing anything worth noting, so her brain kept erasing the useless information her eyes had gathered. That's how people get to work with no memory of having driven there. Then, with no warning, Britt thought she saw something. It wasn't really an object. It was more of a discoloration. A vast swath of the desert ahead of them just seemed to be a different color. The moon was putting out just enough light to let her see that something was there, but not enough to tell her what it was. Whatever it was large. As she crested a hill, she saw that it seemed to stretch across her entire field of view. It was miles wide. She still couldn't make out any features, just a line, parallel to the horizon, where the ground's color just changed, and another, closer line, where it abruptly changed back. At the far line, the ground's color lightened and continued to get brighter, bit by bit, until the nearer line.
What is that? She thought. I know I should recognize that.
She stared at it. And she stared at it. And she stared at it. And then, finally, she saw it. Sometimes, when a song is playing on a car stereo that's turned way down, you'll only hear the drums and part of the bass, and you'll think, I've never heard this song before. What is this? Then you'll turn the volume up and listen, confused for a few seconds, before realizing it's a song you know well and have memorized. All at once, the song snaps into clarity, and you can't believe that you didn't recognize it in the first place. Britt felt silly for not recognizing instantly that the thing before them was a vast, deep canyon. But she didn't beat herself up about it. She was far too busy turning the cart as hard as she dared and yelling for Martin and Gwen to shift their weight to the cart's inside edge. The outside wheels left the paved path and plowed through the dirt. The inside wheels spun freely in midair. Martin and Gwen perched on the upper edge of the cart, weighing it down and preparing to jump off if need be. Britt cursed herself for not seeing the canyon earlier. The wheels of the cart came within a few feet of the cliff as they careened past. Running parallel to the canyon, Britt straightened the cart out in an attempt to keep from turning it over and casting all of them into oblivion. Roy, oblivious to the danger, shouted, "Don't turn so sharp! You'll lose our motor!"
"That's what I'm trying to do," Britt replied.
"Why?"
Roy asked. Britt grunted,
"Can't explain. We need to stop."
Roy said,
"Oh, then you'll have to turn sharper."
He looked back at the motor. The creature's poor maneuverability had caused it to drift to the right side of the shield, but it corrected this, found the center again, and was still pushing. Just beyond the dirt creature, Roy saw a vast, yawning emptiness, the bottom of which glowed with fire. He yelped like a startled child, gripped the brake handle tighter, and yelled,
"Okay, I see why we need to stop. Just remember to turn left."
Britt said, "I know that, but turning's no good. We're going too fast. We can't turn sharp enough to lose it."
Britt was busy trying to steer. Gwen and Martin were trying to hold on to the side of the cart bed and looked as if they were thinking about jumping. Roy had a good grip, a good view, and a moment to think. He yelled to Britt,
"Try a diminishing radius."
Britt instantly understood what he meant. She yelled, "Hold on!" and pushed the tiller to the right. The cart rattled and groaned. The inside wheels stayed on the ground, but only just. Roy tried to help by jamming his full weight into the brakes. He had been babying them, but now he knew it was all or nothing. The cart had reached the end of its usefulness, and he could save the people he was with, or he could save the brakes. It was an easy choice. He peered over the shield and saw that the creature had drifted to the right. Britt slowly pushed the tiller a little farther to the right. Martin and Gwen held on, white-knuckled, to the inside edge of the cart bed, but the force of the turn was pulling them toward the other side. Britt pushed the tiller farther still. Now the left wheels were in the air. Britt feared they would break under the strain. Roy was clinging to the brake lever like a sea captain clinging to the mast in a typhoon. Martin and Gwen looked like they were hanging from the edge of a roof, not lying on the bed of a cart. Roy yelled,
"A little more, Britt!"
He continued leaning hard into the brakes, but he heard and felt a snap. Then the lever went limp. He didn't know what had broken, but the brakes were out of commission. Britt gritted her teeth and pushed the tiller just a hair farther. There was a scraping noise from the shield, and the cart had no power. Britt heard heavy footsteps recede to her right, but she was far more concerned about the cart, which was still teetering on two wheels in the middle of a tight turn, and now had no forward impetus. It teetered for an instant. Britt swung the tiller back past the center, and the cart fell heavily back onto four wheels and coasted forward on its own momentum. Britt closed her eyes and let out a relieved sigh. She drew in a lungful of air, opened her eyes, then shrieked,
"Brakes!"
They had come out of the turn, aimed almost directly at the edge of the canyon. They had lost some speed, but they were still rolling fast enough that jumping off the cart into the darkness in a rocky desert was an unappealing prospect. Roy saw what Britt saw and yelled,
"No brakes! Turn!"
Gwen lurched for the middle of the cart, shouting,
"No, keep straight! Straight!"
Britt immediately knew what Gwen meant and did as she was told, steering directly for the cliff. Gwen grabbed a stick that was tied to a cord that disappeared between the floorboards of the cart. She yanked the cord hard. Beneath the cart, the cord was tied to a second cord, which was threaded through some small notches in the cart's frame. The second cord terminated on both ends at identical folded bundles of the tough fabric of Roy's former trench coat. The bundles were square and tied up like little gift-wrapped presents. When Gwen pulled the cord, the bows holding the bundles untied. The bundles unfolded into long strips of material 6 feet long and 5 inches wide. The free ends were weighted with lead. The other ends were nailed into the frame of the cart and reinforced. The bundles were positioned in front of the rear wheels. Because the cart was going perfectly straight, when the fabric hit the ground, it was drawn beneath the rear wheels. The fabric pulled tight. The wheels stopped turning. The cart made a sound like it had been hit with a wrecking ball, but the wheels pressed the fabric onto the ground and the cart came to a stop. Britt said,
"That could have been worse."
The cart was on solid ground. The cliff was still at least 10 feet away. She turned around and smiled at Gwen, who was crouched in the bed of the cart with the ripcord in her hand and a relieved look on her face. Martin laughed. Roy said,
"I knew it would work,"
in a tone of voice that said otherwise, then looked back over the shield behind them. That's when he saw the dirt beast rapidly approaching. Roy shouted,
"Jump! Jump now!"
Roy led by example, diving off the cart. Gwen and Britt leapt off the cart, landing hard on the desert floor. Gwen looked back to the cart and saw Martin standing as if preparing to jump, but not moving. Martin's right leg twitched rhythmically as he watched the dirt beast closing in. Martin only waited a moment longer than the others, 3 seconds at most, but they were 3 very important seconds. Some of the Earth Elemental's targets had scattered, but one was still directly ahead. The algorithm that governed its actions saw no need to recalculate. It continued running straight ahead at full speed. Martin held the shield wall to brace himself, then glanced to the cliff edge. He waited approximately 0.5 seconds, then jumped. The elemental struck at an angle, spinning the cart slightly while shoving it forward. The impact was substantial, and the cart lurched forward with surprising speed. The front wheels of the cart had already crossed into thin air by the time Martin's feet had left the cart. He didn't allow for this sudden forward speed when he calculated his trajectory and found himself flying through the air sideways toward the cliff's edge. He landed on solid ground, but desperately clawed at the soil with his hands while his feet swung out into the abyss. The dirt creature noted Martin's jump and attempted to change its course, but it was far too late. Instead of simply following the cart over the edge, it veered off as if attempting to pass the cart as they both went over the edge and were swallowed by the darkness. Britt, Gwen, and Roy were still too stunned to move. They were panicked from the close call, confused from Martin not jumping with them, impressed at Martin's quick thinking, alarmed at his nearly going off the cliff anyway, delighted when Martin's plan worked, and relieved when Martin came to a stop safe and sound. Now they were standing there with all of those emotions still swimming in their systems. In the distance, there was a dull, quiet crashing noise as Martin pulled himself to the safety of solid ground and bellowed,
"My name is James Tiberius Kirk!"
Only Gwen got the joke, but that was enough for Martin. The others advanced on Martin, making sure he was really okay. Then they looked over the edge into the canyon below. The floor was alive with flowing rivulets of lava. They branched off of one another, flowed away and around seemingly random dark shapes that were only visible for their failure to emit light, then reconnected to continue flowing down the ravine. They knew that what was left of the cart and what was left of the dirt creature were down there somewhere, but even with the light from the lava, it was impossible to know where in this light and at this distance. Gwen said,
"Roy, not one crack about women drivers, okay?"
Roy said,
"Of course not. One just saved my life."